you won't be living with me.
Hello and welcome back to Backbone Radio. This delicious little sliver of music is from Devotchka. We'll be playing some Devotchka throughout the show just to give our listeners a little bit of a taste. Right now we're talking with Helen Kriebel. She is the creator of the Red Card Solution, an innovative solution to our immigration dilemma. This morning, or it was possibly yesterday morning, I came across an article that says, Costly U.S. Border Fence Gets the Gate. And it talks about how the high-tech, so-called high-tech fence that they had put together along about 53 miles of the southern border, that it just wasn't working. And even though it cost taxpayers about $800 million, they're going to go ahead and ditch the idea. And it made me think, when we've got so many people crossing the border, both people who want work, as well as criminals, as well as potential terrorists, could something like the Red Card Solution cut down on our need to patrol our border and allow us to catch the real bad guys a little more easily? Helen Kriebel, what is your take on that?
Well, I think if you could get most of the people who are coming across the border illegally through a gate because they know they can get a red card and they can get a job that way, and employers can get red cards, then anybody who doesn't have one is going to be basically unemployable. And then, of course, our laws should crack down on those who insist who don't go and get a red card, who are here illegally, because they're criminals. And so are the employers who then employ them. So it would cut down on the people coming across the border by hundreds of thousands. And the people who, so that the agents can see that the people who are coming across are bad guys, and they can deal with them that way. So it greatly simplifies the border. But you know, Krista, that comment about how the drones and the technological fence doesn't work, I have heard on Fox News actually today that that was a very old system, and since then there is a new system that absolutely does work, and much of the expense that's gone into it already could be recouped by putting in this new virtual fence. So the idea that the virtual fence has to be scrapped is probably not true.
So we could put in a better virtual fence, pair it with a market-driven employer option, and have a kind of a multifaceted solution to our current problem.
Absolutely, because it really will work for border security. When we had work permits with the Bracero program in the 50s and 60s, border apprehensions went from 1 million before it got going to 35,000 when it was at its peak, and back to 1 million after they phased out the Bracero program. So we have proof positive that a good work program will hugely reduce the issue on the border.
So, I remember somebody telling me once that a good law is easy to comply with but hard to disobey. And it seems to me that we have kind of the opposite right now. We've got laws that are easy to break but hard to obey. So you've got employers that have a hard time hiring workers. Like you said, the paperwork keeps getting thrown in the trash. You can't get the visas. And then you've got a porous border where people can come across illegally. By doing something like the Red Card Solution, you could make it so that the law is easier to comply with, both for employees or prospective employees and employers, and harder to disobey because those who run afoul of the law will be easier to find and shipped home.
Right. And, you know, here's the time when we're trying to create jobs, and yet people like me who can't get the labor we need. I mean, without visas, I have two choices. Close my business, fire my 25 American citizen workers for want of eight temporary entry-level jobs, or hire people who are illegal and risk going to federal prison for 3 years. And it's a trauma. It's a totally traumatic situation. And I'm a goody two-shoes. I've never broken a law in my life. That I should be in this situation to run and grow a business that I love is just unconscionable. But I think the best thing about this Red Card program is that there are no taxpayer costs because they're paid by fees in the private sector, and there are no new federal employees. In fact, there'd be a lot fewer. So those
like
are
that.
Good things in this time, and I do hope people will take a good look at this suggestion.
And these workers, they would be paying taxes, just like...
Of course, because once they're legal, they're going to be covered by workman's comp if they get hurt on the job instead of sneaking off to the emergency room. They will have no benefits because they're not citizens except emergency medical. But on the other hand, they will be paying their 7.5% FICA taxes or whatever it might be at the time, matched by their employer, for things like Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, which they will never get. So if that money were kept in the state in which they work, there would be a net even no expense to the states to have these workers.
Would they be allowed to bring their families with them?
Well, I think, yes, I don't think you could say no. Every other country allows families to come under the same terms that I just mentioned. But I think very few people will do it if they can go back and visit their families on a regular basis legally and return to their jobs. It's because they can't see their families if they leave them, for example, in Mexico under these terms. And if they go home, to risk coming back to their job would be extremely dangerous. And that's why families are being brought into the U.S. illegally. And we have sort of captive people whose only way out is to become a citizen. And in 20 years with H-2B workers, I have never had a worker who wanted to be a U.S. citizen. They want to work here, they want to capitalize their small businesses, and they want to go home.
I think you told a little story about one of your workers who, when I think you had asked him, would you want to become a citizen? He said, no, I can make enough money working here seasonally and then live a middle-class lifestyle back in Mexico with my family.
That's right. And he had 6 kids, as many of the Mexican workers have lots of kids. And as he said, I'd live poor as a poor person in the U.S., and I have a gorgeous home and a nice little business started in Mexico. Why would I want to be a U.S. citizen? The dollar in Mexico goes 3 times as far.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, the Red Card Solution, you have a website. What is that website?
It's redcardsolution, one word, .com. And I'd love people to go. I'd love them to contact us, to tell us their ideas. This is something that can be improved and worked on. So, you know, I hope people will engage. We need a solution to this problem, and this is the only solution out there that I have heard of that meets our basic principles as Americans.
Wait, the principles of free enterprise and rule of law.
Exactly. Exactly. And even the one of moral and humane attitudes. And we want little limited government and lower taxes and market forces in the private sector and the rule of law. These are all very important things. But when you give it to the federal government, it doesn't tend to work the way we would like it in the end.
Now, I understand that you've been around the country, you've been out to Congress and the Heritage Foundation and other places to present this idea. What has the response been?
It's been excellent. People like Newt Gingrich, Ed Fulner, Ed Meese, Jeb Bush, Tim Pawlenty have all expressed really serious interest in this. It is a solution. Mike Pence was very interested in carrying it in Congress. Kay Bailey Hutchison. These are people who say we've got to solve the problem, and this is something that we can believe in, something that could work. And we all know you can't round up 10 to 15 million illegal people in the country, 1 million American citizen employers. You have to incentivize them to want to do the right thing in the right way, which is what this program does.
Make it easy to obey and hard to break the law.
There you go.
That's good. So you're having a good reception. You've got the website. You're moving forward with this idea. Where do you think you'll go from here?
I think my ultimate goal at this point is to make sure that it gets discussed in committee and gets discussed on the floor. You know, we're a foundation. We educate people. We can't be for bills. We can't be for individual candidates. But educating and saying, look, there are other solutions to this problem. Let's get to it. And then federal government, you get to the citizenship piece. And then the citizenship piece, the only thing I think must be done is that it should be a uniform playing field all the way across. It can't be a special deal for this group and a special deal for that group. It's got to be, this is how you become a citizen of the United States, and it's the same for everybody.
I agree. It seems like it's the sort of country quotas always struck me as kind of odd and subject to manipulation. I like the idea. Oh, go on.
I'm sorry. Well, even this Dream Act, you know, in our hearts, we would all love this Dream Act, although it's almost a million people who are no longer children, most of them, all of them. But it's what we're saying is that this group of children brought here when they were brought here as children who are not citizens are going to be have their problem fixed, but this group isn't.
That's true. It just it's
it
a very piecemeal.
Be the same. Either we fix it for children who are for people who are brought here as children, or we don't. But I just hate this. We're going to fix it for ag, but we're not going to fix it for construction or for a landscape or for my business, the equestrian industry. Either fix it or don't fix it, but so, don't piecemeal it. It's not the American way. All men are created equal in America. We do it fairly across the board, according to our founding documents.
And well, I think it is a great note to leave off on. The music has started. That means that we're headed towards the break. Thank you so much, Helen Kriebel, and I hope that everyone visits your website at redcardsolution.com. And thanks
Thank
again for being
on
the show.
Thank you very much, Krista. It was a great opportunity.
Take care. Bye-bye. And welcome back. This is Krista Kafer on Backbone Radio. I'm sitting in for Ross Kaminsky, who is off on some fabulous adventure, and I'm having a fabulous adventure of my own. So we're up with our next guest, something quite tasty. We've got Michael Amen from the Ugly Goat Milk Company. And for the record, I've been there, I've seen the goats, and I don't think they're ugly. I think they're really cute. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, Krista. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. I think your little farm is terrific. And I just wanted to give listeners a taste of something a little bit different. And that is a small business here in Colorado that is producing good things. Can you tell us a little bit about your farm?
Sure. Have a goat dairy and an alpaca farm located outside of Elizabeth, Colorado. And I milk 12 goats. And we've got a nice little herd of alpacas. And we make handmade artisan cheeses, goat milk fudge, goat milk soaps, offer farm fresh eggs, show quality alpacas, and fiber animals, and also yarn and finished alpaca products.
And I've seen all of these products and tasted many of these products. And I would have to say that the creamy cheese with the herbs in it, I think it's your custom recipe, is the yummiest.
Well, thank you.
And the eggs are terrific, too.
The Chev, and that's a soft goat cheese, and that's my mixed spice blend. So I'm glad you like it.
Ugh, it's great on crackers. I also feel good about buying your eggs. When I don't get down to Elizabeth, I also buy free-range eggs at the grocery store because I've seen the way chickens are treated in factory egg farms where you've got three birds to a cage crawling on top of each other. You know, these are living creatures and should be treated with respect. I like what I saw on your farm with the chickens just running around. They seem happy.
Yep, chickens everywhere out here.
It was great. And I'm intrigued by the idea of raw milk versus store-bought milk. What's the difference?
Milk that you buy from the grocery store has been pasteurized and comes from it'd be a larger commercial dairy farm. Raw milk, it is legal to consume in the state of Colorado as long as you have a milk share contract with a farmer. And the raw milk has not been pasteurized. It's fresh out of the goat or cow. And a lot of people, you know, they like a natural, healthy choice and will consume that instead of pasteurized store-bought milk.
I tried a little bit of it, and it's really tasty. So if I wanted to buy, like, a gallon of it, I could come and fill out a contract with you and then regularly come and buy milk from you?
Yes. There's a herd share program, and it requires any consumer to sign a contract, and you buy a share of the dairy herd, and then you pay the farmer a monthly fee to it's a boarding fee to take care of your percentage of the herd that you own, and in return you're entitled to milk.
That sounds terrific. It's very innovative. And if I weren't lactose intolerant, I'd probably go that route.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm just going to stick with the eggs. You mentioned that, I think when I saw you, that free-range eggs and caged chicken eggs, there actually might be a difference in like the properties in the egg.
Well, I guess I should ask you, since you've had both, can you taste a difference?
I think they're a little bit tastier.
Yeah, the free-range eggs from free-range hens are, you know, they have darker yolks, and they're just packed full of vitamins and minerals, and I feel they're naturally higher in omega-3s just because of the natural diet the hens have. They run loose on the farm, they get to scratch in the dirt, lay in the sun, and they chase grasshoppers, eat bugs, grass. They're out with the goats and the alpacas eating alfalfa, and, you know, they live a life that they're very happy, and I believe happy hens produce excellent eggs.
Well, I've tasted them, and I concur. Now, I've seen your alpacas. I petted your goats, and I think I got to pet the guard llama, but the cute little alpacas, they're a little bit shyer, so I didn't get to pet them. But how is alpaca wool distinctive from lamb's wool?
Well, the biggest distinction is there is not any lanolin in alpaca wool, or in alpaca fiber, so it's hyperallergenic.
Mm.
There's 22 distinctive colors in alpacas, and it's a strong and resilient fiber, and it's the most fire-retardant fiber in the world.
Really?
And it's lighter weight and warmer than any other natural fiber.
I've seen your yarn. It is really beautiful, and it's super soft, like softer than regular wool.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me.
It's produced here locally, right here in Elizabeth.
It is beautiful.
Thank you.
I think I need to get some and knit something just to
you
have it around my neck.
And Andrew needs to take credit for the yarn. He actually has the fiber mill out here. He purchased it about a year ago, and people can come and bring their natural fibers, whatever it is, alpaca, wool, yak, bison, and he can turn it into yarn, rovings, bats, whatever you would like it, you know, to be turned into for you.
That's fantastic. So Andrew is the head of the fiber mill, and
yes,
and you're running the farm, and then
goat dairy.
Oh yeah, dairy. And then now, is there a website for your dairy?
Yeah, we have a farm website, and that is www.springtoo, and that's SPRINGTOO farm.com.
And what about the fiber operation?
And that is springtoofibers.com.
Okay.
And if anybody is interested, just, you know, go to our website and you can send us emails. And we encourage people to come out and visit us and meet all of our girls that produce wonderful products for us.
I recommend it as well. We brought my niece, and it was just thrilling for her. It was thrilling for me. I actually feel a little envy. I wish I could have a little farmlet and have some of these gorgeous creatures on my own property. As it stands, I have two beehives, but I think that's about as far as I can go. Which, by the way, I just thought of this. I have alpaca screens on them right now with alpaca wool to keep them warm over the winter. So
right,
alpaca fur does have a lot of different uses. Well,
it does, and actually people are actually using it for mulch around their garden plants and flowers, and it holds the moisture down.
Really?
Yeah.
I would hate to use such a beautiful thing for such a mundane purpose. To me, it would be like using, I don't know, caviar as toothpaste. But hey, if it works, I think that would be
absolutely
awesome. So people would contact you through the website, and you know, there was one other question I thought of as I was thinking about things. I was curious about your farm. Is there a lot of state and local and federal type laws you have to abide by, or is it pretty easy to run a dairy?
Well, a raw dairy, there's the Senate Bill 05-055, and that's just the raw milk herd share program here in Colorado. And that's, you know, anyone who's going to consume raw milk needs to have a contract with their farm. And I'm also a proud member of the RMAC, and that's the Raw Milk Association of Colorado. And even though we don't have laws within our organization, we have strict
different
guidelines
standards
that we all adhere to.
You know, Michael, I cut us short on time. We're
okay.
Running up to the break. And I just want to say thank you so, so much. And I hope everyone visits your website. And I can't wait to come back to your dairy and
thank
see you and see all
You're
the
welcome
girls.
Anytime.
Take care. We'll
Thanks.
Be back soon.
Bye.
To your breast, don't put it to